Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence of Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you on this December the 24th, Christmas Eve on the West Coast, and now December the 25th, Merry Christmas on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on blogtalkradio.com, as well as on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. To all of you folks in the U.S. military, we wish you a very Merry Christmas. It's tradition for people to play the same Christmas songs over and over and over. And I think tonight we're going to sort of explore the concept of the solar system and the galaxy and the universe. And I think we've heard enough Christmas music, not that I wouldn't play any. I've been playing some for the past 2 weeks periodically. But I'm going to go back to a message that Stevie Wonder brought out many years ago on a recording that he did called Fulfillingness First Finale. And this is a song called Heaven is 10 Zillion Light Years Away.
Zillion light. Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Your host, Brooks Agnew, believes everything you do will eventually affect the universe. He's trying to do that on purpose each Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the BBS Radio Network. Come where the results are always positive. Explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You'll be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch. X Squared Radio. So long, but we've got so far. People, where is your car? Inside, please let him be. And I say it's taking him so long, cause we've got so far to come. But if you open your heart, you can feel it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Feel his spirit.
Well, if we contemplate that heaven is 10 zillion light years away and some 2,000 and at least 14 years ago, God sent his only begotten son to planet Earth to wake up mankind and bring us the truth so that we wouldn't lose our souls to the evil that pervades the universe. I guess this song is quite prophetic, and it reveals a truth that even Christ talked about. He said that when we go to God, we must have the mind of a child, the innocence, the purity, the spotless nature of not having committed sin. And today, sin is promoted on the mainstream media, on television, radio, newspapers, magazines, movies, you name it. It's everywhere. And the murder of millions of people is promoted as a cause to give us freedom, when in reality, knowledge is what really sets us free. Knowledge of the truth. Not the lies of history, not the lies of everyday news, not the lies of our political leaders, not the lies of the corrupt elite that want to destroy everything that God created and really create an opposite paradigm of God's reality. And our history has been hidden from us, our ancestry, our bloodlines, our true bloodlines, and I'm not speaking about these Illuminati bloodlines, but the way that mankind came to be, to exist, has been masked, obfuscated, hidden from us, distorted, and we're going to talk about those things and our connections here as Earth beings. Apologize for that. Don't know what's going on. Anyway, I was just in the process of talking about how our origins have been hidden from us. And once we get our guest on here, I'm going to introduce him, and we're going to have a discussion about that. Maybe it's time in the meantime to play another song, which I will do. Thank you. That was Lucinda Drayton from England singing a song of hers called Child. Hopefully now we have reestablished communications with tonight's guest. He is a scientist, an inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he's our resident science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, are you with us?
I sure hope so. It's been a rough entry. How are you tonight, Don?
Oh, I'm hunky-dory right about now. Thank you. Merry Christmas, Jim.
Merry Christmas to you too, Don. Thank you.
We have technical problems from time to time, so we just have to grin and bear it, I guess. I don't know if you got to hear my introduction. I was basically saying how our origins have been hidden from us, spun into a variety of myths and stories, and they call it history. And they, meaning those that wrote the books and hid the truth from us. And I think it would be interesting on Christmas Day to speak a little bit about the creation and mankind's origin and our connection with our solar system, our galaxy, the universe, and how all life is connected. Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to begin with on
Christmas? Wow, that's quite a request, because I could talk forever on that subject.
Well, let's do.
Well, first of all, I think that it's becoming common knowledge in certain circles that life is not a rarity. In fact, it is. It's so prevalent throughout the universe that the essence of life itself is probably a basic building block of the entire creation. And just because we're only familiar with what we've got here on this planet certainly doesn't mean that there isn't anything special anywhere else. In fact, the basic essence of life pervades all of space. So with that kind of an opening for thought, it becomes pretty evident that we're not so special. Well, the Creator has made many, many mansions throughout the universe, and each of them houses, maybe not each of them, but many, many of them house beings of different varieties, and the concept of life is not unique to Earth. When you start to ponder, you know, how we actually got here from this particular world, and where our race or races stem from, that becomes a little bit more complicated, not because the information doesn't exist, but because it's been denied to us. And one of the things that you and I were talking about earlier this week was the fact that it's pretty evident now that this so-called Hall of Records, which is supposed to be a depository for the total history of mankind on this world, was placed in a cavern beneath the Sphinx at some point in our history, with the hope that eventually it would be relocated and that information would be disseminated across the globe so that people would understand their true heritage. And luckily, there are several such repositories. One is supposed to be, well, one was in Atlantis, which is probably gone. Another one is somewhere in Tibet, and then there's the one in Egypt, and there's also supposed to be one somewhere in South America. So anyway, the point is that is a very strong possibility that the repository that was in Egypt has been discovered. Now, we talked about this on other shows, the fact that there was this huge cavern discovered underneath the Sphinx and it was actually opened or reopened for the sake of the audience on international television about 9 or 10 years ago under the auspices of Zawas, I think his name is, who is the head of Egyptian antiquities in Egypt. And the interesting thing is, after having made such a big commotion about it, it was then completely scrubbed from the public consciousness. But what I actually saw, because I watched the show, was the illumination of this gigantic room in which there were several immense sarcophagi. And it has come to our attention now that there was another series of rooms discovered after that, and that was probably the reason for the blackout. Now, the strange thing about it is, if you start to look at what's being spoon-fed to us about, so many different areas of life and science fiction and, you know, space battles and all this kind of stuff, it's almost like we're being groomed for the release of some kind of information pertaining to our past, pertaining to the origins of life on Earth, etc. The strange thing about it is the controlling interests on this planet have never, ever been generous with anything that they know, whether it be weapon systems or, you know, financial secrets, you name it. They hoard it. They keep it to themselves. So the strange thing is, if they really did discover this, and they want to prepare humanity for some kind of emerging truth, we're forced to ask the question, why the sudden change in policy? I mean, they could just as easily scurry those ancient tablets away someplace and translate them and do what they want with the information without us ever knowing about it. But the story is leaked out either by accident or on purpose. And the fact of the matter is that for the last 20, 30 years now, they've been preparing us for something. And this is in opposition to what they usually do. So my feeling on the issue, and Don, I'd love to hear your remarks on this, I think that the possibility exists that a higher authority wants this information to come out, and they know that they can't stop it from coming out, but what they're trying to do is shape the situation so that they can use the emerging knowledge to their own benefit. Does that sound like something that makes sense to you?
Yes, it does. Now, for sake of, let's say, laying maybe a little bit more specific foundation, I'd just for a moment like to share some of what you and I have talked about off the air. And we've discussed this on other shows, by the way. But more specifically, you question a possible connection of a research institute that was founded by the son of Edgar Cayce, who talked about Atlantis and Egypt and the pyramids and ancient civilizations and many of the readings that he gave. Now, that's presuming that the things that we heard about Edgar Cayce were true. As I was doing some research in regard to a couple of requests you made of me in that regard, I recalled having spoken with Hugh Lynn Cayce within 3 hours of a miraculous awakening that I had occur personally in my life back in 1982. And this awakening wasn't just a brief moment. It wasn't just a flash. It was an event that lasted about 48 hours. I wondered if it would ever cease. Because of the, let's say, the unfoldment of my metaphysical gifts, my spiritual discernment, and certain metaphysical talents that I had from that time, and that I've cultivated since then. And it dawned on me that I had spoken with Hugh Lynn Casey, and then I, through my research, I had learned he died shortly after that conversation. Exactly when, I can't tell you, but it was in the same year. And I found that to be extremely coincidental, although there are no coincidences. And things that I began seeing and knowing related to this very topic out of nowhere. I had no interest in the pyramids of Egypt other than I loved reading about them when I was a young boy and a teenager, and later on. I loved looking at pictures of the pyramids. I loved getting my hands on anything I could to study them. And I eventually began to study the physics and the mathematics of pyramidology. And I studied a lot of the Egyptian literature. I read the Egyptian Book of the Dead. And I became aware of those who were interested in making discoveries of the pyramids. And as I got into studying politics and the banking system, I found that many of the bankers, one in particular, the Rockefellers, were very, very interested in what lay there in Egypt, especially the secrets that were buried under the monuments. And I made... through the course of this recent research I did in the last couple of days, I made some very interesting connections. And when I found out that Hugh Lynn Casey was cremated, I thought, that's kind of interesting because it basically gets rid of all the evidence when someone is cremated. Now, a lot of people choose cremation over a traditional embalming and burial in a casket. But there's a sort of a mysticism about keeping one's ashes. And as I looked at the Association for Research and Enlightenment, I began to see a connection likely to the Rockefellers. And I saw found other organizations that were conducting parallel research on this topic. And what I became familiar with in terms of vortices that are in the area and to where they connect in the galaxy, certainly in the solar system, I began to see where what we were being told about certain things was very, very superficial in comparison to what I had learned and what others who had conducted similar studies had learned. So... yes, this is a very secret topic. We're not supposed to know anything about this. But I can tell you, and when I say we're not supposed to know anything, of course, this is under this oppressive system that we have, which is political, and it's also extraterrestrial in nature. So feel free to go on. I just wanted to add that this is more than coincidence.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that in certain circles, the entire topic that you were just relating is actually referred to as the Stargate theory or the Stargate phenomenon. And supposedly it rests on the fact that there are natural vortices, as you mentioned, or wormholes, or whatever you choose to call them, connections between, not only between dimensions, but even between certain points in our own system that can be traveled once they've been identified. And what's interesting about it is, if you read all the ancient stuff, they talk about all this quite openly. I mean, they talk about, you know, tunnels to other worlds and, you know, mystical paths to other realms and this type of stuff, which, of course, we've been taught to poo-hoo all that And just because it wasn't described in terms of, you know, vortices and other acceptable terms, you know, in light of today's technology, it's easily swept under the rug. But the fact of the matter is, as you well know, there are more than one area on the surface of this planet which may be linked by energy tubes or vortices or wormholes to other worlds, including some in our own solar system. And if that's the case, some of the ancient locations, and I'm not going to say for sure that Egypt is one of them because I honestly don't know, but some of the ancient locations on Earth may in fact be points of departure for other realms. And it may have been well known at one point in time that this was the case. I find it very interesting that, you know, that there has been a link in history between Mars and Cairo for the longest time, and it doesn't seem to be based on anything because obviously they're a long ways from each other, but it could well be that there is a connection there of some sort, either with one of these energy passages or perhaps in the long distance past there was some type of commerce between those two worlds. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I brought it up is because of the fact that if, you know, the Stargate movie, for instance, was a big success. That guy, Kurt Russell, played the lead role in that, if I'm not mistaken. And it could have been based on actual information of some sort. Hollywoodized, no doubt, but it could have been based on something real. And it's possible that that type of discovery has already been made here. And if it's true, then consider the possibility that advanced parties have already left the Earth and gone to other planets by means of these natural connecting links. And so it's not so far out, if that turns out to be true, that we could actually have a contingent of Earth, modern Earthmen, living on Mars or some of the other out planets, and helping us to prepare a way to reach that location in larger numbers using spaceships. But the advance parties could have gone by means of a natural connection, and that would explain an awful lot of things. But it also highlights the fact that if any of this is true, again, we have been denied the knowledge of it on an open basis, and we're forced to use conjecture to come up with the possible explanations for these things. But again, it brings us back to the idea of this Hall of Records. Richard Hoagland talked about, you know, the discoveries that were made on Mars with the Viking and the Mars probes that flew by and took pictures of this area called Cydonia. And it was his conclusion and the conclusion of others that this whole area was an artificial city or an artificially constructed region on that planet that had been destroyed by war or some other tragedy. And ever since that information came out, there has been a struggle to discover what the heck is the connection between Mars, at least in its past history, and Earth, and our past. And some of that would definitely be recorded in these Atlantean records that are supposedly buried in different places around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings us back to the idea of if the elite know this, and have already translated some of these records, which is not impossible. They may have been written in two languages, like the Rosetta Stone, for instance. Then what are we being groomed for, and why is it that they're bringing this information out now, or have been bringing it out over the past 25, 30 years? And that's something, Don, which I would really like to rely on you for, because you have that incredible ability to psychically explore the reasons for these things. The implication that I get is that the gods are returning, whoever they are. And it would be interesting to hear your input on that.
Well, in regard to your comment on the pyramids at Giza, I would say that now some have speculated that the various openings on the pyramid, the Great Pyramid, actually align with our twin sun. And if you take into consideration the star Alcyone, allegedly at certain periods of the year, aligns exactly with that star. The placement of the pyramids at the equator, dividing the land masses in half, and having originally been aligned to true north. Now I understand it's off by about 4 degrees, and that could be as a result of war and earthquakes and other catastrophes that have struck the earth. You could say a natural or an unnatural pole shift, one precipitated by nuclear war, for example, or a space war. There have been many, many civilizations that have come from space, and those civilizations, and I use that word lightly, have been, or those beings that came to this planet have been driven off primarily because of their evil nature. It seems to be a recurring theme that when there was evil on the earth and there was massive war, massive destruction, and massive loss of life, that that these beings were driven off the planet. And in terms of these, I prefer to call them dimensional portals. I think the word Stargate is a Hollywood word. They use a portal from the Earth to Mars does not require a gate to a star. Okay, star has nothing to do with it. It's a passageway. It's a tunnel. It's a vortex moving from one place to another, and not necessarily ending at either end at the Earth or at Mars, for example. Now, I happen to know of another dimensional portal. And the listening audience will find this interesting, that moves from Paraguay, or between Paraguay in South America and Mars. This is an open dimensional portal, and it happens to touch the Earth at the location of the 98,840-acre Bush compound in Paraguay, where there is an underground base and a contingency of soldiers that American taxpayers are paying for, sitting on the largest aquifer in that area, if not in all of South America. So there's definitely a connection there. That portal is being used to go to Mars and to come back from Mars. And it's been discovered. When exactly it was discovered, I don't know, but I think we started reporting this sometime in 2007, early 2007. We had discovered that Jenna Bush went there to work out the details, and that the people who worked out this agreement with the government of Paraguay also got some sort of amnesty against being tried for war crimes or any evil deeds. And next, adjacent to that, the Reverend Sun Young Moon bought 1 million acres, I hear. Something like 1 million acres. That's a large piece of land. So these exist all over the planet. Now, going back to the Middle East and Northern Africa, my understanding is that there is a 1,000-mile-wide vortex over that entire area, and contained within that master or that grand vortex are smaller vortices that go to different areas. There is one in the Gulf of Aden, which is south of Yemen, north of Somalia. And that one begins 10 miles up in the atmosphere and goes all the way to Venus. Now, there are people on Venus, and they live a subterranean existence. I don't have all the reasons why, but I speculate that some of that has to do with the atmosphere. Some of it could have to do with the temperatures as well. Mars is a different situation, and it is nothing like what we are shown in photographs that, from rovers that seem to fail and then have the unique ability to kickstart themselves again and even wash their own windows, their own lenses, so to speak. If we look at the dichotomies of the information we've been given about Mars, we're not being told the truth about what's going on up there, about the history of it. It's always a meteorite that destroys a planet. Well, how many meteorites do we have hitting the Earth right now? You know, we've got a lot of two-legged meteorites walking around that are doing a good job destroying it. I can say that much. So hopefully that comment will suffice for the time being.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing is, of course, that if we do have activities on these planets, what is the big picture? What is the goal here? And how long do they really think that they can keep it completely quiet? I mean, it's leaking out left and right, regardless of our own interest on the subject. And one of the things that I have heard about from a number of people is that the local workers over there who are engaged in helping these digs and tunnel explorations and all the other stuff that's going on, the recovery of various artifacts, et cetera, they don't have any qualms about talking about all this stuff. It's just that nobody ever asks them because the system of different levels of society over there is such that if you're a local digger or whatever, you know, you only associate with your own kind, and you're not very high up on the social register, whereas the people that are supposedly sitting behind the mahogany desks and whatnot in these elaborate places, like, for instance, the Cairo Museum, have no reason to have a social intercourse with these underlings. But anybody that wants to really find out what's going on just goes and talks to them, and for a few dollars, they're happy to spill their guts. And so it has come out, you know, over the years, that there's an enormous amount of activity going on the Giza Plateau. They do a lot of it at night. They do a lot of it in the time periods when the tourist activity is a minimum. And then every once in a while, they'll close down an entire monument for a series of months and just use the cover story that it's being cleaned, which, of course, is partially true. They do have to remove traces of human sweat and the effects of carbon dioxide from thousands of people's lungs. All of that has a detrimental effect on the quality of the stone. But during that same time, they've been tunneling, they've been removing artifacts secretly, and there's an awful lot going on over there, considering the fact that it's not in the general media. And you know, the legend is that the gods are going to return, that that had been talked about countless times by countless authors. And we've touched upon it also in the works of Stitchin and others, that this notion of the return of the people who started all of this was a reality. Now, whether it is or it isn't, I don't know, but something is definitely going on, and I find it interesting that the public is being groomed for something just by the way all this is being handled. And the part that irks me is, why would they bother to do that, which is an exception to their normal modus operandi, when, in fact, all I'd have to do is continue all of this under a cloak of secrecy like they do everything else, and who would be the wiser? You know, the average Joe is happy with his six-pack and a good football game on TV and a bag of pretzels. So I was hoping, Don, that you might be able to shed some light on that. What do you think is the ultimate intention of all of this, assuming that they have found these records?
Well, the big question is, what is it they're hiding, and who are they hiding it from? Well, they're hiding this from those of us who could make hay out of it. Certainly, there are scientists that are not just willy-nilly accepting the scientific theorems and postulates and what is accepted science straight across the board. You're the perfect example of that. You've met scientists who are very educated, very knowledgeable in terms of having their degree, and yet they can't explain the very phenomena you routinely demonstrate in your inventions. And it's not even that advanced in terms of other types of sciences that are out there, that are available if one would get their head out of their posterior. So the average scientist is going to try to defend himself, because he or she will come to the conclusion that it's necessary to brush up on the higher sciences and go beyond opening one's mind to find the truth. This is all about hiding the truth, as simple as it can be described. Now, who would want the truth hidden from us? Why? I ask this rhetorical question just about every night. What is so wrong about people knowing the truth about anything? Well, when they find out the truth and they find out who they really are, they realize that they don't have to be controlled. They can free themselves. Immediately, the knowledge sets them free. And those that are behind all of this, the obfuscation of history and the sequestration of all of this scientific knowledge, all of this historical knowledge, that is probably quite true and probably quite accurate and quite revealing, that even today, the science and the technology is behind what they had thousands of years ago. They could never admit that to us. And the proof of that is in the fact that there are those who are thousands of years ahead of us, who are in our midst right now. And they don't want us to see that. They have operated the system through fear and through lying and deceit and ignorance, you know, indoctrination to systems that lead nowhere other than down the dead-end road to total ignorance. That's the reason they're obfuscating it. That's the reason, you see, to have us doing their bidding, they have someone producing the things they require to maintain this militaristic attitude against whoever would represent the truth, whoever would represent what is good, whatever would come against evil. And that's it in the nutshell. I could be much more long-winded about it, but in essence, that's what it is. So they're preparing us for the fact that there is this showdown coming. Jim, there are thousands of ships, thousands and thousands of ships arriving at the Earth, coming through the atmosphere, moving through these vortices that we're talking about, going to secret underground bases. And those bases aren't just here in the United States. They're all over the Middle East. They're in Russia. They're in China. They're in Australia, South America, Central America. They're everywhere. And there's a lot of activity going on. There's a lot of galactic interest in what's going on here on the Earth, because the destruction of the Earth through nuclear war or through the use of scalar weapons is affecting the rest of the universe. And they know this. Both sides know this. The good and the evil both know it. Those that use it for evil purposes know that it's evil. But they're soulless beings. They have no compassion. They don't operate out of love. They might as well be ants in an anthill, because the consciousness they exhibit to be so powerful and to be so knowledgeable, technologically speaking, and to be void of any decency or any love or anything that honors the creation is proof that they're the opposite, you see. And the gig is up. And so they invent these stories that these planets have the will of their own, or somebody can steer these planets with a steering wheel or a rudder, like a ship, and lead it through the galaxy, through our solar system, and aim for planet Earth, shooting comets and meteorites. Uh-oh, the boogeyman's coming. I don't know how else to describe it, but that's it in a nutshell, Jim.
Well, all these thousands of ships that are coming here, are they all reptilian? I mean, we must have some good guys out there also.
Oh, we have good guys.
What is the actual nature of the game? I mean, that's the question. Is there going to actually be, do you think, a revelation of what's really going on and what has been going on for centuries?
Yes.
To the population of Earth?
Yes, yes. You see, this attempt to subjugate the whole Earth under a totalitarian system is meeting resistance. Not everyone wants this. Even not every government wants this. Not every nationality or every ethnicity on the planet wants to go along with this ruthless takeover. Only those who are not of this realm would come here to try to control it. There's no need to control who you are over others who are just like you. There's no logical reason to do it other than to usurp the authority of God. And to think that they have to devise systems based on fear to accomplish that shows that they themselves are in fear. They are of fear. They are fear. It's simple. If you think this out and just observe it without putting your emotions into it, and just observe it. If God created everything out of love, why does anything else exist? Well, he gave free will to all living beings. And these beings are making choices, and they choose instead to be God. They hide it under behind words like democracy. That's the new one. Or sustainability. Well, yeah, they're very interested in and concerned about sustaining themselves. So they're going to sell us on that word. The universe is eternal. Where does sustainability come in to challenge eternity? How can what is less challenge what is greater? How can what is finite challenge what is all-inclusive? It cannot. It's insane. Would you like to comment, sir?
Well, I think that that part of the situation is self-evident. I mean, all you got to do is just try to do the simplest thing, and you realize quite quickly that you haven't got it. I mean, you know, we talk about the wonders of creation and whatnot, and naturally they exist everywhere. You can see it in the stars. You can see it in planets. You can certainly see it in the amazing complexity and diversity of life. But there isn't any one of those things that these elites can create on their own. They can mess with something that already exists, like they have with cloning, for instance, and with other medical experiments and things of that sort. But all of the things that they accomplish are of a very reduced level of perfection, and they certainly aren't really godlike. It's a trick of their own minds. I mean, they're as much under the thumb of illusions as they have forced us to be. If they really believe that the things that they have done with our money and our energies make them godlike, that's an illusion of their own egos. It certainly isn't true.
Well, that is the essence of the story of the fallen angels, isn't it?
Yeah, apparently they're still falling.
Yeah, they're still moving in that direction, aren't they? They haven't stopped. And this idea that which lives has to give up its life to sustain that falling is even more insane. You know, blood rituals, for example, the sacrifice of babies and children and women and bloodlines, either through rituals or wars, whatever you want. War is another kind of ritual. It's just on a larger scale. It's not done on a concrete slab or limestone or you know, some substance that they feel they have to have to make it be powerful. And it's always in opposition to the creation. It's always destructive. To take the life of an innocent child, the purpose being to add some magical quality to one's intention, is a direct affront to the creation and to the Creator. And on this day, which, you know, I have issue about the day that Jesus was born. I certainly know, and anyone that studied the issue knows, that Jesus the Christ was not born on December 25th. The evidence shows that he was born in the fall. And, but not that that matters. We're celebrating the day today. But the fact that the Creator sent his son, he sent an emissary, he sent a prophet to awaken mankind and to remind mankind of God's laws. They had these laws prior to Christ coming here. Every prophet that ever came to this earth was murdered. It sort of shows you the tendencies of the beings that were running the planet for how many thousands of years. Now, you asked where some of these groups come from. They're not all reptilian. And there are species from other realms. There's a group which are called the Tall Blondes. Some call them Nordics because they resemble those that live in Scandinavia. There are the Greys. Some seem to be a species in and of themselves, and then there are those that appear to be hybrids created in a laboratory. let's say, a combination of you could say, androids of a sort that have a certain amount of consciousness, a certain amount of ability to think, but it's all about or related to how they were created, how they were designed by those who they serve. See, this is all, with these beings, it's all about takeover, subjugation, raiding and raping of a planet and the people. And they move on. When they run out of what they require to exist, they move on. They found this to be a very diverse place to be, as do other beings. There's a group that comes from 38 light years away from the Pegasus constellation. Very recent arrivals here, flying around in triangular ships. And they have been seen using this dimensional portal, which leads up to Venus. And they have been seen on Venus as well. So there's obviously a need as one travels through space, either to come here or to go visit the other planets in the solar system, because there are many resources that are required for their existence. Maybe they've depleted those, you see. Certainly that's going on to some extent right here on this planet, not to mention how the entire planet's ecosystems are being polluted and destroyed. And there seems to be no other recourse for dealing with it than blaming those that are witnessing this happen. Not the ones doing it, those who are witnessing it. Jim, I don't fly a jet airplane every day across the country. Neither do you. Neither do most of our listening audience. Yet we get blamed for the air pollution and the use of millions and millions of gallons of fuel a day that's being spewed into the atmosphere. I don't put the fluorides in the drinking water. Neither do you. But they do. And their reasons for it are never what they tell us they are. You see, it's one lie after another. In fact, they do what they do to tap water to destroy us, to cause us to be sick. And they've devised all kinds of ways to enrich themselves, to give them power and control over the physicality, the material realm. And they've discarded the spiritual because they're void of spirit. They operate outside the spiritual realm, so they use the mind and the body and all the methods and programs they've developed to control us that way. Simple. I mean, you know this. You're not going to disagree with this because you know that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't disagree with it at all. I'm right on with you. And that's just the tip of the iceberg anyway.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But I have the uncontrollable feeling that something is coming to a head, you know, and I'm kind of overwhelmed in a sense, because it isn't just one issue that's coming to a head. You know, it's like there are so many lies about so many topics that if all of it comes to, if all of it bursts upon the general consciousness at the same time, I can easily see how it would be an amazingly stunning, literally stunning experience. But, you know, that may be the only intelligent way to handle it, because we don't react well with integrating spoon-fed information over long periods of time. It's very, very obvious that humanity as a whole has an extremely short memory and a very juvenile attention span. So that's an absolute truth. And so maybe the only way that that you can win the attention for a long enough period of time to get the message across is to wrap the average human being across the side of the head with a 2x4 to get his attention and then explain it to him. And if all of this bursts upon the general public simultaneously, that's certainly going to constitute one heck of a big 2x4.
Mm-hmm.
Because it affects every single facet of our lives on this world. Nothing will be left untouched. Nothing.
Yes. Well, this system that we've been talking about is designed to obfuscate the truth, to hide the truth, to distort the truth, to mask the truth, to put a veil around the truth. And the truth doesn't need our opinions or our thoughts or our ideas or our perceptions to exist. It is what it is, and it's unchangeable. The bridge from us to the truth is knowledge. It's the knowing of facts, the knowing of information, the ability to apply those facts or the knowing to skills, to talents, to action that resonates with the truth, that honors the truth, that honors the creation. And therefore, belief, which is an assumption and doesn't require an action, it's a transitive, ethereal action that doesn't require you lift a finger. Oh, I believe that. I don't, you know, end of story, period. I don't have to do anything, but it doesn't lead you to the truth. It doesn't lead you to the act of knowing, which produces knowledge, which leads you to understand the truth and to be able to assimilate it into your being. Because when you know the truth, you raise your vibration. You move in the opposite direction of ignorance and belief. And I think...
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, ultimately,
belief is interlocked with faith, and that's a very noble way of looking at it, but it's a dead end, unfortunately. It doesn't lead you to anything.
Yeah, faith, I think, is acquired as one gains knowledge.
Well, it depends on what kind of faith you're talking about. I see what you're driving at, but what I meant was, like, for instance, you know, when there's no obvious answer to a particular issue, and people just say, well, take it on a matter of faith, that just reinforces the belief, but it doesn't lead to anything.
Well, if it's not based on truth, or if it's not leading in the direction of truth, then that's correct. Faith is in a sense, an ethereal word as well. Is there really a verb for expressing one's faith? Well, you could say trust, but then, you know, in the sense that you're saying, you know, it could lead you in the wrong direction. It's like the government that says, trust us, we know what we're doing. Oh, yeah. Well, but does that mean what they're doing is in our best interest or in their best interest, you see? That's always been the dichotomy of what they say. Trust us, we'll get out of this mess. If we are really to trust them at all, we should recognize that they haven't gotten out of the mess once yet. They haven't accomplished it once. They've always masked it over and presented it to us in a different way. You know, repeating the same mistakes over and over again does not lead you to the solution. The solution is outside of doing what you've been doing all along. It's something new. It's something different. And it has to resonate with the creation. It has to resonate with what is true and what is eternal.
Yeah, because otherwise it's literally the definition of insanity. If you do the same thing over and over again and expect different results, there's something wrong with you.
See, when Christ prayed and he began his prayers with thanks, as if the prayer had already been answered prior to him asking for the miracle or the solution to come about, he knew something about the truth and was demonstrating this through his ministry, the healing of people, the changing of bread and wine to feed multitudes of people beyond what anyone had ever seen. You have to know quite a bit about the creation to be able to approach it that way, with that faith. You see, that is true faith, knowing.
But that faith is based on knowledge. That's a different story.
That's why I said knowing. Yes.
Yeah.
You see? But he gave us that example, okay? And it's twisted every other way. Did he say, hey, you need to start a group and call it a church and assign a middleman to be the gateway to me? Okay? In other words, there's a troll that's going to call himself a minister or a preacher. Now, is this every minister or preacher? No, there are some good ministers and preachers, and there were some good rabbis, okay? And there are some good shamans, and there are some good medicine men. Seems that all the wise people in every religion acknowledge the reality of the individual that we know as Jesus Christ, the Son of God. They all recognize him. And they hold in high esteem other prophets, other teachers and truth tellers, sages that came to this earth with similar messages.
Oh yeah, there's probably been hundreds of them, even some that we don't know anything about.
Yes, of course. But there were always those that came here to take control over everything. And now, if they were sacredly dispensed with that responsibility, their job would be effortless, wouldn't it? Everyone would just fall into place and not question a thing. But when it resonates within your being that what they're telling you you must do, what you must not do, is in direct conflict with the God-given sovereignty you have, then there's a problem, isn't there? You with us, Jim? Oh, here we go again. We have the jackbooted thugs playing the games with us. Doug, if you're listening, can you try to get Jim back on the line, please? See, this is the truth, folks. And this is exactly on point tonight. This is exactly the message that they don't want us to hear. Because you don't get this from a 501c3 corporation that's doing the government's bidding. The people are the government. The people are the government. It says so in the Constitution. Jim, are you back with us?
Yeah, I am. That was a very lovely little side trick, but I'm back.
Okay, I wanted to give you the opportunity to comment.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear anything what you said, so it's pretty hard to comment on it.
from what point?
Well, let me think. The last thing I heard was that you were talking about how all these prophets that have come here and most all different nationalities and ethnicities and whatnot recognize the attributes of these prophets and of Christ in one way or another, and that was basically all I heard.
Okay, well, basically, I said that it's the message of God's sovereignty. or God's God-given sovereignty to us, the given free will. It doesn't resonate with us when that's taken away. And for whatever reasons, mankind through thousands of years has been oppressed, murdered, imprisoned. They do everything they can to stop someone from awakening to the reality of his creation and of the creation. And that's the basis for this assault on us, on our speech, on our thoughts, on our actions. It's all designed to imprison us through a system of fear and ignorance and lies and deceit. Christ identified those beings as the money changers. Is it any surprise that the world's of probably foremost problem is the economic system? So in essence, I was saying that. I added that. I hadn't mentioned that.
Well, it's certainly true. I mean, the fact that money is, you might say, the universal medium of exchange, everybody normally looks upon it only in that light, and that quite naturally ties it into our everyday survival. But if you ask somebody point blank, listen, what is money for? What is the actual nature of money? You're always trying to get more of it, but what is it? Most people can't answer that question. And we all know that money is a quantitative measurement of our labor. It is our labor in a stored format.
And it's a symbolic one, too.
Pardon me?
It's a symbolic one, too.
Well, of course, it's symbolic. But, I mean, the point is that here's all these people that are taught from the very earliest times in their lives about the need for money and the value of money, and they'll basically do anything to get their hands on it. And most of them don't even know what it is. And the irony of that is that if everybody understood what money really was, not only would they have more of it, but they would also be in a much better position to avoid all of these snares and controls that have been placed upon it, supposedly for our benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all based on various aspects of fear and insecurity. I mean, look at the idea of a bank. I mean, what's safer for your money, to have it in a bank or to have it in a coffee tin under your mattress, you know? And that very idea propels people to put their money in a bank, and then once they do, they're automatically tied into the entire banking arrangement, which has been honed to perfection for thousands of years. So it's a very insidious plan, but the irony of it is that if it wasn't for the greed factor, it could be a very beautiful thing. And yeah. It'd be interesting to see if it ever swings around to the other extreme. You know, most of the time the pendulum, once it overshoots, heads back in the other direction. It'd be interesting to see if that happens in our case with the world financial situation once we get it back on track.
Yeah, there are many throughout history who have lived well beyond 100 years. It's said that Adam lived over 900 years. I doubt that he had money, but he did have abundance, and he understood the laws of abundance and the laws of cause and effect. And to imply that there is only one solution, or there's one consequence to abundance, is insane. where did this idea that abundance, which can be spiritual abundance and in the knowing of who you are and what you are and your relationship to the rest of the universe, you can have all the money in the world or no money in the world and still have that reality be the primary focus of your life's experience. So where does the banking
system... Yes, but in order for that to be the case, you have to have an awareness of what constitutes the true value. We have been programmed to believe that the little green papers and the strange little coins that we carry around are the true focus of our efforts and a true measure of abundance. And the irony of it is that... The ancients had it all worked out. I mean, the whole scheme of nature on Earth is that, you know, things want to happen in a certain way, and they're designed to happen by themselves. And the truly prudent man simply steps into that stream of activity, which he had nothing to do with the design of, and works with it. And that's how he acquires abundance. I mean, nothing could be more obvious along this line of thought than the lives of very primitive peoples, like in Amazonia, for instance, and in the rainforests around the world, where they still live coupled directly into nature. And if you were to take one of those individuals and put him in our society, not only would he be completely lost and disconnected from the gestalt of his world, but he probably would perish. And the irony of it is, the reverse is also true. You know, take one of those fat, porky little businessmen out of his high-rise office and drop him in the Amazon somewhere and see how well he does. Doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And... you know, but the irony of it is, it could all be that way, because all of it is nothing more than the realization of what the Creator had in mind and then getting in phase with that. That's what true abundance is all about.
In that respect, could it be that God, in dealing with this issue of once and for all of the evil that he cast out of heaven, out of the highest realms of the creation, we'll say, those that dwelt with God. In his wisdom, he decided that he would create a being, man, who was not of the angelic realm in terms of his physical makeup, but contained God's spirit, who would evolve generation by generation until he reached a pinnacle of awareness, a pinnacle of consciousness and spirituality, to once and for all put an end to the evil. I think those are the times that we're in right now. Could it be?
Well, that would be lovely.
That's the purpose of life.
I think that if you carry your analogy just a little bit further, you'll even see a bigger portion of the picture too, Don, and that is that I can understand the possibility that once a human being develops to a point where his consciousness and his soul, his volume of soul, if you want to use that term, exceeds certain limits, that he no longer needs the body. And that's the interesting point that's made by so many of the mystics in the world, you know, that once you reach a certain point in your evolution, you don't have to come back. Well, that doesn't mean that you don't experience other things or that you've stopped evolving. It just means that you understand the way of things to the point where reincarnating again doesn't necessarily give you anything. And then I imagine you get involved with other things, whatever they may be. But I can see how that's a very distinct possibility, that the fact that we have to incarnate in a three-dimensional world is really a teaching mechanism in its own right that allows the slow evolution of the soul to the point where you return to the spiritual realm with a completely different perspective on things. And that might be the very mechanism that eventually overturns evil, because once you reach that point, you're no longer capable of being enticed by the coils of evil. You're beyond it already. And the only thing is an ever-ending stream of other beings that are coming into the arena for the first time, and they are obviously not at that level. So that brings me back to what I said earlier. The only way I can see of sidestepping the whole thing and making it happen at a faster rate is if there is an instantaneous disclosure of the truth in all its facets. It might be a little shocking and disconcerting, but in the long run, it would do a lot of good.
Well, those beings that you're describing as having to start all over are today called politicians. So, in fact, they're giving us a pretty good demonstration of the truth of your statement right now as we speak. We just have to wake up and recognize that fact. You see, we are the answer to these things. And, you know, those portals, whether you want to call them dimensional portals or stargates or wormholes, whatever you call them, they serve a purpose, but they're not the ultimate purpose. It's like a road. It's like getting in your car and going down a road. How much do you yearn to be on the road? Most people hate it, because of the ignorance and the stupidity that you encounter along the way. But yet, I think it's symbolic, the path, because it's really an invisible path until you recognize the endless possibilities of arriving at alternative circumstances and conclusions. We don't have to accept the conclusions that are paved for us. That's usurpation of God's free will, demanding that we have.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing stopping you from turning your car off the road and driving cross country. It might be a little bumpy, and it might not be as comfortable, but guaranteed, you'll learn a heck of a lot more than if you stay on the highway.
Yeah, or you could get out of your car and fly. Or you could get out of your body and fly. You know, there are different ways to approach it. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck. I'm just saying, we're accepting what's given to us without questioning it. And that certainly isn't the path to self-discovery or mutual discovery. And knowledge of the creation and the truth.
No, but eventually it will enlighten you, and it just may be a very uncomfortable form of enlightenment.
Imagine, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I thought you broke up there on me. I couldn't hear you for a second. No, that's all I was going to say, that since we do have free will, even if you stay on the path that's prescribed, you will eventually be enlightenment. It's just that it'll be very uncomfortable and possibly even dangerous form of existence until you come to certain conclusions. But I think no matter which path you take, ultimately, you will find your soul being enlightened, even if you don't want it to be. The real trick here is, how do you cultivate a system which is more efficient? In other words, we want to accelerate the greatest possible number of individuals into a higher consciousness in the least amount of time.
Yeah. Well, it either is going to happen one person at a time, or it's going to be a groundswell of awakening. I think that's happening. Many are awakening to the fact that there is something other than what is being represented going on. There's an alternative reality making itself very apparent to us. And we have help. There are those that pray for help. Most couldn't stand seeing God actually intervene and making himself known. They couldn't stand the frequency of that experience, the intensity of it. Most would go mad. Truly, truly insane. And many probably would cease to exist. So we're given the, I think it's a sort of a convenience. We're allowed to forget certain things and begin remembering piece by piece. We're sort of fractional beings. And as we become more conscious, we improve our ability to expand and to take in more information and digest it or assimilate it into our being, into our essence. And it's merely a matter of experience, because I truly feel that it's all there already. It's just arriving at the point to where we recognize that and can put it to practical use, practical application.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I see that in my own work. You know, I thank God my memory is good enough that I can look back and actually relive, you know, the level that I was at when I started being interested in all this stuff. And I can truly track my own growth. And the neat thing about it, Don, which I think is a worthwhile measure of hope, is the fact that once you put effort behind that process, once you decide that your own evolution is the thing that you want to promote, what happens is that the consciousness develops, but it develops exponentially. If you plotted it as a curve, it would start out hardly changing at all for quite some time, and then it would start to climb. And once you reach the knee of the curve, then it takes off, you know, with an unbelievable slope. And I can actually see that happening. And that's only in the one small facet, you know, of my personal interests and my personal pursuits. You know, just imagine what kind of a world it could be if not only did everybody pursue that type of a destiny, but then intermingled so that they would cross-pollinate and, you know, be an assistance to everyone else's development. Why, within just a few years, this planet would be unrecognizable. It would change so much. It really would.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's probably what the elite fear more than anything. Because even though they go out of their way to suppress everything that they can, to break spirit and to downplay education and what have you, it's still happening. and it's happening, you know, faster and faster. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to stop it.
I agree.
I pray that they can't, anyway.
Yeah. Before we end the show tonight, I'd like to play an instrumental that I composed, and this is for anyone that's feeling this message and connecting with it. This was a result of my first near-death experience, my second, actually, not my first, and an overwhelming conviction that coming back into this physical body and doing the work I'm doing now touched the essence of my being. And this is called In My Heart. Let's get the right, hit the wrong button here. And I tell you that I heard this music, I had died and I was out of my body, and this music stayed with me. I brought it back. Thank you. Jim, that's my experience in what I perceived as heaven in a song. And I suppose I could probably write hundreds of songs to describe that experience, but that was just the feeling. We have a caller on the line. Can you believe this? Someone we both know, Gary from Arkansas, is with us. Gary, we're going to have to keep it short because I was about to close out. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I wanted to call in and at least tell you that, and thank you, basically, for being on the air at this special time of the year. Most people would be with friends and family doing fun things, and there are old people like me out in the woods of Arkansas that have no friends and family. They were greatly appreciated, other than hearing a rerun on most of the so-called networks. So I wanted to thank you for that. And reflecting back on earlier conversations, excuse me, I kind of have a sense of anger, but I think the sadness outweighs the anger in those that are in control, so to speak. We all know who that is, that have denied us our past, our present, and our future by covering things up and lying to us and all the things we go through. I feel sorry about that, but there's not much I can do about it. I have been on a search for about 12 years, and I have come to the same conclusions that you and James and other people have come to. There's a lot more going on than we're being told, and I think there's enough of us out there that have been awakened. Should they shut the internet down, TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, and periodicals, which don't give us anything anyway. The internet is the key to this. If they even do that, there's enough of us out here that have got audio files, CDs, and everything else, that this thing will go on no matter what they do. So, Merry Christmas to you all, and I'm not saying Happy Holidays. Merry Christmas to you all and to people of other faiths. You know, season's greetings to you as well. But, you know, not to be, I'm an equal opportunity.
Well, your words are very kind, Gary, and know that you do have a family, and that is us here on the show tonight, as well as everybody that works at BBS Radio, Wind Talkers Radio, and all the listening audience. They're of the same family. We're the human family, okay? We are God's children.
That's what I wanted to say, and I'm sure that you're happy to hear that there's people out here that feel that way. You are the family.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Jim, do you want to comment before Gary hangs up?
Well, I'm just very touched that he would take the time to call in and share those feelings, not only with you and me, but with all the other people who can hear his voice. You know, it's our goal as well as our responsibility to generate a fabric of unity across this planet, and also, you know, to disseminate the knowledge and the truth. And it's wonderful to know that we're not alone in that task, right, Don?
Yes, yes. Well, you sounded a bit like Darth Vader there, so we think we were getting a bit of a feedback loop there, but it came through. Yes, Gary, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Say hello to all our friends in Arkansas, and do the same. Wish them a very Merry Christmas.
I will do that. I'm prepared for a three-dog night. I've got the neighbor's dog, two cats, and my own two dogs in my bunk bed for me tonight. Three-dog night. Yeah, I guess you understand what that means.
Yes, I do.
That means a real cold night. I'm ready for it. Y'all have a good holiday season, and thank you so much for being there.
All right, and thanks for listening in. Thanks for sharing those thoughts with us too, Gary.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Jim, well, it's time to wrap up. I just thought that we might smooth things out a bit before you deliver your closing remarks. And, you know, I'm not forgetting, or we're not forgetting why we celebrate this day and the bigger picture of why God's Son came here to the earth and what his message was about. And certainly we could just talk about that forever and never cover all the truth that was revealed in his short life here on earth. But he's been through the whole galaxy and visited many other planets. And there are those that didn't meet him the same way we did here on the earth. And still they got the truth and the message, and they've moved on. And they're helping us today, and that they can do that is significant, because they're demonstrating us to us that it can be done. We don't have to stay in this insanity, in this chaos. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you said everything I would have said. It's absolutely true. And I think that the whole symbol of Christmas is the idea of the birth of a new hope. And that's probably how we should look at this. You know, we have at our disposal right now the wherewithal to create a new world right here for ourselves, and all we have to do is embrace the hope that Christmas represents and apply the knowledge that we've been talking about, and we can get the job done. We don't have to remain slaves to the system. So with that, all I can say is I wish everybody a very Merry Christmas, and I wish you the best for the upcoming New Year as well.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much for your participation on the show tonight and your tolerance of the technical issues. We do have those. This is live radio. This isn't a tape recording playing back to the audience. So I appreciate your patience and your wisdom and your creativity, your invention, and your spirit. And I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and your family and our mutual friends. Please pass the message on. And I look forward to having you on the show next week.
Well, I'll be happy to be back, and also, Don, a very Merry Christmas to you, and just want to let you know that it means a lot to me to have a friend such as you.
Likewise. Well, that wraps it up. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guest, very special guest, scientist and inventor Jim Murray. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show, and wish all of you in the U.S. military a very, very safe and a very happy and merry Christmas. And if you don't tune in before the end of the year in advance, also wish you a happy new year. Over at BBS Radio, we had Doug Newsom on the sound tonight. I want to thank him for hanging in there. He's had a very long, trying day manning the ship by himself. And thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truott. In the meantime, I wish you a very Merry Christmas and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and all of God's blessings, and have a good night.